reading is taken from 1 Corinthians chapter 1,
verses 18 to 25.
For the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has God not made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since, in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God, through the folly of what we preach, to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Today's reading is Mark chapter 8, verses 31 to 38. And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed and after 3 days rise again. And he said this plainly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and seeing his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, Get behind me, Satan. For you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man. And calling the crowd to him with his disciples, he said to them, If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what can a man give in return for his soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
May the words of my lips and the meditations of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. During the course of this sermon, I'm going to be reflecting on both of the readings that we've had from 1 Corinthians and from Mark this morning. So you might just like to keep your fingers in those so you can look at them when I turn to them. But let me start by telling you about Jack. Jack was about 7 years old. He loved going to school. He had lots of friends there. If you went past the school at playtime, you could see him playing there together with his friends. But Jack's parents, his mum and his dad, his mother and his father, his mum and his dad, they were worried. Because Jack had so many friends, a couple of times a week, he'd be invited round to one of his friends' houses to play and have a meal with them. This is in the north of England, where I come from. In the north of England, we call what we eat in the evening our tea. None of your posh dinners and suppers. In the north of England, we have our tea in the evening. So Jack was often invited to have his tea at his friend's house. But his parents gradually realised that he'd never invited any of his friends back to his house to invite them to play and to come and have their tea. And they got more and more worried. And so one day, finally, Jack's dad took him to one side. Suddenly said, Me and your mum have noticed something. We've noticed that you never ask any of your friends back to come and visit you here and to have their tea. Is it because of your mum's hands? Is it because of your mum's hands? And Jack looked a bit sheepish, he just nodded. You see, Jack's mum's hands looked horrible. They were black and scarred and misshapen. And Jack, in his seven-year-old mind, had obviously worked out that if his friends came and ate with him and his mum and his dad, then they were bound to see his mum's hands. It couldn't be avoided. And perhaps his friends would laugh at him because of his mum's hands. And so he never invited his friends to come round for tea. "Is it because of your mum's hands?" his dad asked. Jack looked sheepish, and it all went quiet for a few seconds. And then Jack's dad said, "Well, son, I need to tell you how your mum's hands got to be like that. You see, when you were a baby in the house we were living in, there was a log fire that we had. And one day, when your mum was busy, she put you down in front of the fire while she was doing the ironing. But she put you too close to the fire, and a spark came out of the fire and reached you, and your clothes set on fire. And your mum didn't think twice. She ran up to you and put the fire out with her hands. That's how your mum's hands," his dad said, "that's how your mum's hands got to be like that." Jack took all this in, his eyes filled with tears. For the rest of the night, he was very quiet. Next morning, he went off to school, and about 3:30, there was a knock on the door, and it was Jack. His mum let him in. But Jack wasn't alone. He had one of his friends with him, and he asked, "Can I take my friend up to my room?" "Of course, son," his mum said, and so up they went. And his mum couldn't help overhearing what Jack said to his friend as they got to the top of the stairs. Jack said, "When we go downstairs, have a look at my mum's hands. When you see them, you'll see how much she loves me. You'll see how much she loves me." On this fourth Sunday in Lent, our thoughts turn more and more towards the cross. We hear again that passage from Mark 8, Jesus' invitation to take up our cross and to follow him along the way of the cross. He sets his face towards Jerusalem, calls us to take up our cross and follow him. And we do well to remember that way of the cross, which Jesus treads, which Martin was just talking about, is a way of love, is a way of his love for us, that he follows that way of the cross out of love for us. As Jesus walks that way, he's already wounded. He's already been scourged. The crown of thorns has already been placed on his head. That alone would have wounded him terribly. And yet he walks willingly towards Calvary, the place where even more wounds will be inflicted on him, wounds which will eventually lead to his death. And yet, laid on the cross, as he's made ready to be crucified, out of love for us, he stretches out his hands, that nails may cruelly be knocked into them. Not neat little nails, the sort we use when we're doing do-it-yourself jobs around the house, but huge nails of iron, which will tear painfully into his skin and cause great agony. Jesus walks the way of the cross. He's wounded for us, but wounded as a sign of his love for us. And in these next weeks, we will do well to gaze more and more on Jesus' wounded hands and become ever more aware as we look at his hands, wounded for us, that in his wounded hands, as we look on his hands, they show, just like Jack's mum's hands, how much he loves us. We do well to reflect on our wounded Saviour, because our appreciation of how he's been wounded for our sake is an important stepping stone towards our fully embracing and fully appreciating the great love that he's shown for us. He's willingly entered into our woundedness and made it his own. He's shared in our woundedness. By his wounds we've been healed, wrote St. Peter in the first chapter of his first epistle. Jesus wounded for us, and wounded for us for all eternity. The great hymn writer Charles Wesley, one of his most famous hymns, writes this. It tells us the idea of the wounded Jesus living for us already in heaven. He says, "Those dear tokens of his passion still his bedazzling body bears. With what rapture gaze we on those glorious scars." Jesus living in heaven, still bearing out of love for us the scars, the wounds which were inflicted on him. And in the tune, in him, crowned with many crowns, sung to the tune we've just used before, the hymn writer Matthew Bridges, too, continues the theme of Jesus reigning from heaven as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, but still being the wounded Jesus, wounded for us. Crown him the Lord of love, he writes. Behold his hands and side, those wounds yet visible above, in beauty glorified. Jesus has taken our wounded humanity with him into heaven. The Jesus who reigns at God's right hand, the Jesus who is King of the universe and Lord of the Church, has taken with him into heaven our brokenness, our woundedness, as a sign that in him, on the cross, our broken humanity has been healed, if only we, in our woundedness, will reach out to his wounded hands and let him take hold of our lives and bring us healing. And as a sign of that, he's taken into heaven his own woundedness, as a sign that his wounds and our wounds can be bathed in the redeeming light of the glory of God and be healed. Jesus' wounded hands are the hands of love stretched out to us for all eternity, saying, look what I've done for you. Come to me and be healed through the love I've shown you on the cross. And he longs for our response to be not other than the response of Thomas, who on the first Easter day was invited to put his fingers and his hands into the wounds of Jesus. And he could respond only, could Thomas, by falling to his knees and saying, my Lord and my God. So in these days, leading up to our thanksgiving for Christ's death and resurrection, as we begin to reflect on Jesus taking up his cross and bearing it to the place of his death, we do well to think of those wounded hands of Jesus as a real and true sign of his love for us, signs that the Christ who took on our woundedness, our brokenness, reaches out his wounded hands to us as a sign that we can be healed from our own self-inflicted wounds, wounds of greed, envy, selfishness, lust, anger, all those wounds which disfigure us and mar in us the image of God. In and through Christ's healing work on the cross and in the tomb, in and through his reaching out his wounded hands out to us, our wounds can and must be healed. But our readings too remind us that we are called to be ready to be wounded for his sake. For what we hear is Jesus reminding us not only that he will take the way of the cross, but his call to us to take up our cross, to deny ourselves, and to follow him along the way of the cross, along which he leads us. As with so much in a Christian faith, opting to do that is profoundly counter-cultural. In Western Europe, at least, we live in a risk-averse society. That was summed up for me a few months ago when I was in a conference house somewhere in England. There was a jug which was clearly labelled hot water. On it there was also a sign, be careful in using this, this may be hot. We go out of our way to make our lives as safe as possible. When we fly, there are endless drills about what to do if the plane should fall into the sea. No hotel is allowed to operate these days without fireproof doors. When we drive our children around, if they're below a certain age, they need to be firmly secured in a special seat at the back of the car. We all have to have smoke alarms in our homes and make sure the batteries are in them. And all that's the good, we're probably the safest generation that any generation has been before us. Doesn't necessarily make us any happier than ever we were before, but at least it means we're less likely to come to a sticky end in this generation than the generations which went before us. We're less likely to wear the scars, the wounds, which are simply normally a consequence of being alive. But for all of us who follow Jesus Christ, ours cannot be a risk-averse faith. It can't be a risk-averse faith. If any want to become my followers, that's saying again from St. Mark, if any want to become my followers, then let them deny themselves, take up their cross and follow me. That is not a risk-averse commandment. That is an invitation to take risks, not to be averse to risks, but to embrace them. To follow Jesus is to open ourselves to being wounded. Follow Jesus and we will bear the scars, but glorious scars, scars which will make our lives much more worth the living, but scars nonetheless. It's as if Jesus would say, not just come to me and I will give you rest, but come to me and you will be wounded. And the sort of woundedness which following Jesus involves can fairly readily be teased out from today's readings. I'm going to think especially now about the reading from Corinthians. For anyone to be sentenced to death by crucifixion in Jesus' day was deeply demeaning. For all sorts of reasons, it was just about the cruelest, most demeaning form of death that had ever been devised. It was also the most humiliating. You were paraded to your place of death in a very public way, with people jeering you as you made your way along with your cross on your back. On the cross, your clothes were stripped from you. You were fully exposed to human view. You lost control of your basic bodily functions. And all the while, people looked on and mocked and jeered, as indeed we know from the gospel accounts they did to Jesus when he was crucified, while his mother and companions waiting below were reduced to silence by what was going on. Paul would have known all this, hence his powerful words in that extract from the first letter to the Corinthians this morning. The message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, he writes, and yes, of course it is, perhaps literally even more so in his day than our own. The message which Paul had made his own was that a man dying a deeply shameful death, exposed to public humiliation, given a death reserved for the lowest criminals of all, wounded, bleeding. Paul's message was that in this event and in this man lies the key to our relationship with God. Of course it's foolishness to anyone who wants to think rationally. Of course it makes no kind of sense to a rational thinking human being. Those of the Jewish faith, he's saying, demand a sign, some visible sign that God has acted through Jesus. Actually, you and I know that in the Gospels there are signs aplenty. The sick healed, the lame made to walk, the deaf made to hear, the blind made to see. But those are not the signs which Paul offers. Again and again, in his letters, and here in this extract from his letter to the church in Corinth, The only sign he offers is a broken, battered man hanging on a cross with his wounded hands out of love stretched towards us. And the Greeks demand wisdom, he says. They demand the very sort of rational, intelligent, fluent, coherent discourse which indeed Paul proved himself able to engage in as he travelled throughout what is now modern-day Greece and not least during his visit to Athens. But here, he is very clear. What is on offer trumps all intelligent discourse. Against God, he is saying, in human form, God in human form, bleeding and dying for us on the cross, there's no rational dialogue to be had. Christ stretching out his wounded hands towards us, for love of us, accepting death for us. In the face of all of that, words are almost superfluous. No words, however powerful, no wisdom, however wise, can be more powerful than that sight of Jesus on the cross. And so Paul says, Jews demand signs, Greeks demand wisdom, but we proclaim Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews, foolishness to Gentiles. But God's foolishness, wiser than human wisdom, God's weakness, stronger than human strength. Christ is wounded and killed above all because he stands against human wisdom. He mocks the self-seeking of the accredited religious leaders of his day. He clears the temple of those who exploit the poor people who are coming there to pray. He criticizes publicly the rich people of his day for being too uncaring toward the needs of the poor. In all of this and more, he stands up against the received wisdom of his day. For daring to do that, he is wounded and put to death. Jesus is made to take up his cross and to walk a painful road towards Calvary because he doesn't fit in, because he refuses to go along and readily accept as wise and appropriate all that in which the society in which he was set was too ready to acquiesce. In his teaching, in his actions, he seeks to cast down the mighty from their seats, to lift up the poor and humble, to fill the hungry with good things, to send the rich away empty. And he readily bears the wounds, the literal wounds, the profound spiritual wounds of rejection and death. Out of love, he bears all the wounds which go with acting in that way. And Jesus calls us to deny ourselves, take up our cross, and to follow him. Follow him, therefore, along a road of mocking and rejection and humiliation, a road which to most people around us will make no sense at all as we choose it. Follow him along a road which takes us in a different direction, perhaps often a markedly different direction, than common wisdom in the society in which we're set believes to be appropriate. Following that road means we will not be without wounds, but it's a road which Jesus calls us to tread nevertheless. And here for a moment I go back to St. Mark's Gospel. That's precisely the perspective from which Jesus is coming when he insists that to follow him means to take up your cross and follow him. Jesus makes it clear to the crowds that following him inevitably involves sacrifice. It's part of the deal, part of the package. Mark tells us that he's been busy teaching his disciples that he must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests and the scribes, and be killed. Peter obviously thinks he has a bit of influence with Jesus. He can put him right. He can speak a bit of common sense. And so he takes him to one side and says, come off it, Jesus. Tries to turn him away from what Jesus is saying is his core mission. Tell him that what he's saying is stuff and nonsense, and Jesus is destined for much greater things than that. No wonder Jesus, conscious of what he's being called to do, abuses Peter in such strong terms. Get thee behind me, Satan. He rebukes Peter. And then he realizes clearly that Peter may not be the only one who's thinking that way. Peter's putting into words what everyone else around him is thinking too. And so he realizes that a damage limitation exercise is in order. And so he calls together, we're told, not just the disciples, but the whole crowd which are gathered to hear him. And he speaks in words that cannot be clearer. Again, those words. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. And so to follow the Jesus who was wounded for our sake and whose wounded hands are reached out to us as a sign of his love for us. Following Jesus means being ready ourselves to bear the scars, bear the wounds of being a follower of his. What are those wounds we may ourselves be called to be ready to bear? What are they? Well, quite a long list, but let me mention some of them first of all, some that may just be some of the wounds. They're the wounds, for example, which come from rejection and mockery when we try to speak the gospel into the society in which we're set. The scars we bear when others mock us, because in Christ's name we speak out against a society which is too little caring for the poor, the forgotten, the stranger, the handicapped. A society in which our own understanding, in the light of the gospel, of what is good and true and lovely, is daily set at naught. There are the wounds which come when we realise that being true to walking of the way of the cross means sacrifices in our own financial affairs, having less in our bank accounts because we give faithfully for the building up of the church and the relief of need, having less in material terms of stuff, furniture, holidays, cars, living more simply that others may simply live and so the kingdom can go forward. Having yesterday seen the figures for giving in this church, it's very clear to me that's a lesson which is already being well learned to you, and I thank you for that. The wounds which come when we take on the pain of others as Jesus has taken on our pain, coming alongside people, making time for people who are troubled in mind or spirit for any reason and giving them our time and attention, even though hearing what they have to say and entering into their pain may be profoundly troubling and upsetting for us too, making time for people who need our support and our love, even when there are many other more enjoyable things that we could be doing with our time, recognizing in and through them something too of our own woundedness, and recognizing that, being ready to take on the role of wounded healer. And of course, it will mean the scars which we bear from our encounters with those who refuse to believe that faith in Jesus Christ is a viable option in 21st century Europe, Western Europe. Having the courage to bear witness to the faith which we bear in good times and in bad, even though we know that some, perhaps many, with whom we share our faith, want to mock us, laugh at us, misrepresent us, refuse to take us seriously, and perhaps even worst of all, ignore us. Jesus, in love, holds out his wounded hands to us. "See how much I have loved you," he says. "My wounds are a sign of how powerful is my love. Show your love for me," he says, "by taking on yourself some of my woundedness. Follow me, be wounded for me." And in that, he says, you will find your peace. In being wounded for my sake, you will find your healing. For in following me along the way of the cross, you will find it none other than the way of life and peace. As you lose your life, you will save it. Let me end with two prayers. First of all, a prayer that was found in the pocket of an unknown American Civil War soldier on the battlefield at Gettysburg. He wrote this: "I asked God for strength that I might achieve. I was made weak that I might learn humbly to obey. I asked for health that I might do greater things. I was given infirmity that I might do better things. I asked for riches that I might be happy. I was given poverty that I might be wise. I asked for power that I might have the praise of men. I was given weakness that I might feel the need of God. I asked for all things that I may enjoy life. I was given life that I may enjoy all things. I got nothing that I asked for, but everything I hoped for. Almost despite myself, my unspoken prayers were answered. I am among all men most richly blessed." And finally, a prayer of St. Ignatius of Loyola: "Teach us, good Lord, to serve thee as thou deservest, to give and not to count the cost, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest, to labour and not to seek any reward, save that of knowing that we do thy will. For Jesus' sake, amen."